Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, or Talk to Me in the Car, Coronavirus, a podcast that's usually about all things education and education inspired that I typically record in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. At least that was before the world changed. Now we're in a time where everything is different, everything is upside down, and everything is in a place where we just need support in different ways on different days. So I switched my podcasting schedule from a weekly podcast to a daily podcast. And now that it's up and out and ready to go, I will be answering questions about pretty much anything related to education as the trends are coming, as the freakout moments are happening, as pedagogy turns into panic-gogy, and people are scrambling for ideas for things to do in their classrooms. And today I want to talk about level design and how we can level our activities so that students feel safe and supported to push themselves beyond boundaries or beyond what would be their comfort zones. We'll get to that in a second, but first things first, if you like what you're hearing and want to hear more, please feel free to subscribe. Subscribing is awesome. It helps me. It helps people find the podcast. If you leave a nice comment or a note on the podcasting app of your choice, I appreciate it. It helps people get this in their hands and more ideas out there, which is awesome. It also gives me more people to talk with and then hear ideas from so I can put more back in. So the learning never stops. It's a constant, you know, flywheel of development and refinement and growth and what we can do better. So yeah, let me know how I can help. I'm all in for it. But on top of that, if you like what you hear and you want to hear more directly and you don't want to wait till tomorrow's podcast, because every day of the week, weekdays, I'm pushing out new content, but you want to hear more faster, shoot me a text or a tweet on the Twitter machine. I'm Meehan EDU. That's Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching. I love teaching and I want to get better at it. So by talking to people who are really good at it, people who have questions, believe it or not, there's no stupid questions, especially in a time where we're really making it up as we go. I think, and again, I keep saying it, in a time that's unprecedented, having an instructional coach on demand is probably a thing that a lot of people would wish to have. So if I can offer those services to you and those that support to you, absolutely, I want to be able to help. But at the same time, if you have a question, there's a really good chance there's a lot of other people who are in the same space, and being able to answer your question can help us unlock those same issues for a lot of other educators. So let me know how I can help. I'm all in for that too. And I hope this makes sense. So please, yeah, give me a shout. Okay, so we talked about the basics, how to get a hold of me, and oh yeah, there's one more thing. There's a website where I share a bunch of content totally for free. Please visit my website. Take anything that you'd like from it. It's all yours, man. It's on www.edrenalinerush.com. That's Edrenaline, like educational Edrenaline. So yeah, give me a shout on that one. I give my templates away and my stuff away as much as I can for free, and we can talk further about things that are of interest from there to you. But now I want to get into today's thing. I want to talk about level design and difficulty. It's sort of scaling and scaffolding on the fly, particularly with self-guided units for these distance learning type activities. And I want to talk about what that can look like, because what we've seen over the past week, 2 weeks, if you're away, is synchronized teaching. You know, everyone gets in the same room and learns at the same pace in the same way in the same day. That is now gone the way of the dodo, at least for the foreseeable future, while our schools are on this extended hiatus or recess. And that's not because that's necessarily good or bad, because there is a benefit in getting everybody on the same page, putting everybody in the same room and saying, hey gang, let's all hear this story together, let's all learn from this piece at once. Unfortunately, that's practically, logistically, just not possible in a time like now. We can't depend that all students have internet access that is reliable, right? We can't depend that all students have access to internet or computers at the same time. Can't bank on those things. We can't depend on the idea that all students will understand our instruction on the first time. And though we know these things in our teacher hearts, like to begin with, it is really, I guess, eye-opening and challenging to be like, oh, well, darn it. How do I then design a system that can be all things to all people at all times? And I think the answer for me, and again, it's one answer. There's no silver bullet to this stuff. But something that has helped me out tremendously, both in the classroom and away from it, is the idea of good level design. I want to talk about what I mean by that. If you ever played a video game, it doesn't matter which video game. Pick your favorite. Or pick the one you played most recently. It could be Mario. It could be Legend of Zelda. It could be, I don't know, Madden football, whatever your game is, NBA 2K. What I found, and maybe you've experienced it, is that when you start playing the game, games are actually pretty easy to pick up. They're designed to hook you in like the first 5 minutes that you play them. So you're like, oh, that wasn't so hard. Because again, they were designed as things to be played with our quarters when we were visiting our local arcade. So once you beat that first man, or beat that first guy, or beat that first level, or achieve that first task, you're like, oh, this is pretty easy. I'm going to keep playing. And if you feel like a hero, well, then you want to keep playing, and that makes sense. They're designed to be very quick feedback loops. Either got it 100% right, congratulations, and you move forward, or, oops, not quite 100%, but you want to try again, and they give you another life, which is awesome. In level design, in activity design, in scaling and scaffolding things for students in at-home learning, I think that lesson for me is really, really critical that you design. I think it's called the Keynesian method. I might be wrong on that. But it's you design your first level, your first task, where the completion is almost guaranteed, such that the challenge threshold is so insultingly low that you have no choice but to feel like almost obligated to complete it. And I'll give you an example. Let's pretend it's the Keynesian method. I think it is. It might be called the Keynesian method, but you say to yourself, look, I want to get in shape. I want to work out. So every day I'm going to run 5 miles. Well, 30 seconds into your 5 mile training, you're like, I'm not built for this. I quit. Screw this. I'm going to go back on the couch and eat Cheetos. And that's a normal human reaction. Great. And then you'd give up. Well, that's bad, because that whole idea of that goal now has slipped away from you, right? But what if you set a goal for yourself that says, I want to get in shape. So every day I'm going to work out. And today for my workout, I'm going to do one push-up. That's right. One big one. Let's see, on three. One, two, three, go. You do one push-up just like that. Now, I know I'm insulting because I realize that's very, very small, very, very low level. But as a player in that game, even if you forgot to do your workout before you went to bed, you're like, oh, snap. All right, got to drop and give him one. Like, anybody can do that with very little effort. You don't even have to get dressed, right? You can be in your sleepy PJs and be like, okay, well, I can do one push-up right now, fine. One, two, three, huh, done. That wasn't so bad. But in so doing, what you've done is set up a system whereby you develop the habit of one push-up, one push-up, one push-up, one push-up. So by the time you drop and give me one, well, look, while I'm down here, 3 days in, 5 days in, there's no reason to believe why you couldn't, hey, well, since I'm here, I guess I'll do two, I'll do three, I'll do four. Because that habit of putting yourself in a place where workout just becomes part of the logical outcome was really the hardest part. Getting yourself out of bed to go for a run is much harder in many days than actually going for a run. Pushing yourself to go to the gym is in some ways much, much harder than actually going to the gym, like being at the gym and doing the work there. Because once you're there, I mean, what else is there to do except for it? So all that said, in lesson design, could you, especially in times of distance learning, create products, work products or deliverables that are in some ways so insultingly small that there's no choice for a child but to finish them? But what you do is you've created a system whereby it's almost like an Easter egg hunt or a scavenger hunt. Once you've completed task one, you've earned the right to work on task two. Once you've completed task two, you've earned the right to work on task three, and so on and so forth. So maybe day one is, hey, everybody, you know, this time away from work is crazy. Time away from school is crazy. I don't care what your content area is. Don't care what your content area is at all. Let's pick something I don't know anything about, and let's say it's trigonometry, because I'm really bad at math. I'm just not a math guy. If I said, this time away from school has been really, really hard. Trigonometry seems like the last most important thing in your life. So here's what I want you to do. Because we're all friends here and we're all working to the same end, can you, my young learners, I don't care whether you're high school, I guess high school is trigonometry or, you know, eighth grade, whatever. Can you, my young learners, just because trigonometry needs to take a backseat right now, can you draw me a picture of what your day has looked like on the day-to-day? But I don't need any math in there. I just want to know what your day has looked like. On your mark, get set, go. And they just stick figure their way through it. Now, that's nothing to do with your content area. In fact, it's almost insultingly off task, and you have your precious pet pacing guide, and you're like freaking out about that. We'll get back to the pacing guide in a second. Students will invariably be like, wait, just draw a picture? And you're like, yeah, I don't care. It doesn't have to have fancy graphics. Stick figures are fine. I just want to see what a day in your life has looked like in your time away from normal. Okay. Any kid with a pen and a piece of paper at their house should feel pretty confident that they're able to take, I don't know, 10 minutes and draw a sketch of what a day in the life has looked like. Now, if you want to ramp up the difficulty, you'd be like, oh, wait, I'm sorry, guys. One other thing. When you draw your picture, because it doesn't have to be good, but can you just label that picture so I can see what you were trying to draw? Because if the picture is like kind of junky, like, oh, here's me on a couch. Wait, what is that? Oh, that's a picture of a couch. Got it. Helpful. So students are really working through it at their own pace. Hey, here's what I drew. It's a picture of me on the couch. It's me hanging out playing an Xbox. It's a picture of me with my brother. It's a picture of whatever. So just labeling what they have. And you can say, if you really wanted to scale up the difficulty even a little bit more, all right. Now, how did you guys do that picture? And that was great, by the way. Nice work. It's you on the couch. Cool. I didn't think about that. can you put in five details? Oh, sure. Well, there's a bag of Doritos right there. And then there's like an internet that's maybe not working so great. Or there's a, my cat has hopped in the frame. My cat's name is Whiskers. Fine. But little by little, you're taking a very simple task and layered in difficulty. And that could be, I mean, depending on the age of students you're working with, that could be a 1-day assignment, that could be a 2-day assignment, that could be a 5-day assignment, a 10-day assignment. Like, they're gradually adding more detail to that picture. And because it's such an insultingly low-level thing, they feel like they can bang it out in 30 seconds, there's almost no reason not to get the work done. Now, going back to trigonometry, if it's been, let's say, 4 days and they've been working on their picture, and after that 4 days, they have, I don't know, a picture with 10 details or 15 details. Maybe they've added color, or they've added some sort of elements of shareability. They've had to post it on an online forum for discussion so other students can see it. Fine. But you know, over 4 days or 5 days, students have flexed those muscles. They feel pretty good about their drawing. It has nothing to do with trigonometry, but here we go. Now, it can go right back to trigonometry, because if trigonometry has anything to do with, like, shapes and measurements and angles and, you know, complex formulas, you can ask that next question, asking them to practice that exact same skill. Hey, gang, so when we left, and this is crazy, we were talking about this theorem or this postulate or, like, this graph. Now, my graph here, you show them a picture, is kind of like yours. It's a stick figure. Can you help me explain what's going on in this graph? And it's very, very low level. It's very insulting. It's just like really basic recap. And again, I'm showing you how much I don't know about trigonometry because I can't even give an example. But like if it was slope or intercept or rise over run, I hope that's all trigonometry. If it's not, maybe that's algebra and I apologize. But like, I don't know, there's a picture here. The line is going down. Or there was a line on the right and it went up on the left. Even if that's a very rudimentary, basic description, we can at least get some level of work out of every child. And in the classroom, this is that same thing that we would do where we would call on a child and they'd say, I don't know. And when they say, I don't know, if you call on somebody else to help them, I don't know, explain their way through it, then what you've done is validated that that child is okay not to know answers in class and not to hazard guesses. I'm okay if you don't know the answer. That's fine. That means in some ways you don't have it yet or that I didn't do my job to get you there. I am not okay if you are not willing to try. And the second I call on somebody else in class and like, well, Bobby doesn't know it. Who can tell Bobby what the answer is? And Bobby gets off the hook. The second he shrugs his shoulders and says, well, I don't know. Then Bobby has been rewarded for not trying in class. And I can't allow that. So in this flipped model, in this asynchronous model, I would be like, hey, that answer that you gave is the first step. Can you explain to me why you've said what you said? Now we're in metacognition, right? Well, it starts on the left and it goes to the right. Hey, nice work, Bobby. And in a forum response or an email response, you're right. What you said there is true. It goes left and it was right, or it was right and it is left, or it's up and then it's down, whatever it looks like. Now, can you help me, again, little basic small chunk, explain if a typical rise over run or if a typical graph moves from highest to lowest point, is this graph doing that or is it doing something else? What we've done, this is out of Malcolm Gladwell's book, he talks about the difference between a master and a novice is their ability to hold packets of information and how large the packets are. For a master, this is obvious. Oh, it's this, it's that, whatever it should be. But for the novice, this is brand new information. The time away from school, because we've been so insultingly small with our tasks, actually gives us time to micro-dose or micro-credential our way back into the things where students are stuck. Traditional classrooms were set up for like crowd control because everyone was being taught at the same way at the same time. Well, we don't have that now. And now you have a lot of time. In fact, you might have too much time. You're sitting around kind of getting bored, freaking out about, hey, what do I do with my days? What if you dedicated 5 to 7 minutes a day to replying to each student via an email or via a forum post or via a Flipgrid or via a quick voice thread or something like that, Voxer chat, where now everybody is getting individualized feedback. Hey, Bobby, that was good. You described that part. Yes. I'm concerned about what this next part is. Do you have answers for that? Can you help me see what you don't see? And what they're doing in that method is they're setting themselves up that they're almost guaranteed to succeed on the first thing and the second thing and then the third thing. And then by the time the fourth thing hits, they flex enough muscles that it's like, no, it's the same skill you've already done before. I'm just asking you to flex it here about something that's related to our content area. And let's keep pushing because you know your content way better than I ever could possibly know your content. But setting up systems where it's almost embarrassingly easy to get the first couple of questions right. That's what good games do. They hook you in by saying, hey, I got a knack for this. Then by the time it's 3 hours later, they're stealing your quarters and you're like, I can't figure out how to beat this one man, this one boss, this one level. And it's like, yep, because it's designed to ramp up the difficulty so that the checkpoints get further and further apart. The early ones, Nice work. Attaboy. You got it. Treat your time away from classroom almost as if it's a hard restart from, like, from base camp. Now we're trying to climb a mountain. Check-in stations or checkpoints can be wherever you need them to be throughout the curriculum or out the content. But on their way up the mountain, maybe you can just give them a bunch of early ones that make them feel, hey, this person is with me every step of the way, so I'm not hiking alone. And then they start to build that confidence, like, no, I can go for a few more miles. I'm good. And then gradually you can kind of get a feel for where students are and start to check in with them individually based on what they're seeing or where they're struggling. And maybe if a child is, like, racing ahead of other checkpoints, you can ask those clarifying questions or those pushback items to have them add a little bit more layer of detail or a little bit more, because there's always more we can say. A little bit more to explain their case, or a little bit more to flesh out their reasoning, or a little bit more to, you know, detail, whatever it is. And then what winds up happening is everybody reaches that mountain summit at his or her own pace, but that's okay, because the goal was never to get everybody there at the same time. We just needed to do that because we had, you know, bell schedules and things happening that, like, were beyond our control, state standardized tests, et cetera, et cetera. Now all that's gone, and it's a chance to think about what school could be, what your curriculum could be, and what you can do to help really move each student at their own pace up that mountain by the end of the time with them this year. And if they don't make it to the top of the mountain, at least they're 30% or 40% or 60% higher than they were. And in that, you will have succeeded. And that's, I think, the permission we have to give ourselves and the reflection we have to take through this process is it is brand new. It will not be perfect. And if each child is getting a little bit better than that child would have been, if we're providing that safety, that security, that routine, that encouragement, that affirmation, we're doing our jobs. Our jobs have changed. Our jobs are different, but our jobs are in many ways still the same. Kids need to feel safe, supported. They have to have routine, clarity, and consistency. For many of our kids, that might be the only thing that they have to rely on in a time where things are unreliable. Parents are losing their jobs. They might not have reliable home internet. They might be fighting with siblings. They might be dealing with sick parents or sick family members and Lord knows what else. We have a chance to be that port in a storm for them, and this is our opportunity to do what school could be, not just what school had to be. Those are my thoughts for the day. Would love to hear more from you. Feel free to message me on Twitter at @mehanedu. New podcast tomorrow. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe, leave a comment, let people know. We'll be back again in 24 hours with more. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll catch you tomorrow. Thanks again.